Hi, I'm Alexis Arajema.
And I am Alexandra Nyman.
And this is Shoujo Mojo. It's an anime podcast proving that women can be weebs too.
Each week, we'll discuss an anime or two.
Or three.
And dive into the topics you care most about. This week, we will be discussing Weathering With You, which Alexis and I were, like, honored enough to be able to get into the premiere for Anime NYC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for those who maybe have never been to Anime NYC, they've recently been able to get some really big films in there. Last year, they were able to get the live-action Fullmetal Alchemist from Japan.
It looked so good from the trailer.
That was good. I thought it was good, and it got a really good reception. I got to go last year to that screening, and it was really well-received. When I was talking with my friends in Japan, they all thought it was awful. They really were let down by it. But not to get too derailed on that film, because I feel like that's enough that we could do an entire episode on it itself. Maybe we'll do an episode on remakes in the future, like live-action remakes.
Oh, that would be good. I have so many opinions on Death Note.
Oh, yeah, I'd love to hear those sometime. Okay, we'll do that for sure.
Yes.
Putting it in the backlog. But what we're here to talk about today is Makoto Shinkai's newest film, Weathering With You, as you said. His previous film was Kimi no Nawa, or Your Name, which was, like, really critically acclaimed and well-received around the world. The reason why we decided to do this podcast is because it is going to be released by G-Kids mid-January, and so we're going to talk about it as it's being viewed by, you know, hopefully the rest of the United States.
There's a petition circulating where 56,000 fans have requested that it be brought to India. And it actually managed to reach Shinkai himself, where he had stated, "Ever since the petition has occurred in India, I have kept receiving a lot of messages from Indian fans who are eager to watch the film in movie theaters. I have been overwhelmed by their pureness and passion. Thus, I replied to them that I would be very happy if I could release..." Oh, I can't pronounce that.
Let me see.
Tenkai no Ko?
Yeah, Tenki no Ko. That's actually the name of Weathering With You in Japanese, and it literally translates to weather children, like the children of the weather. Yeah, so Weathering With You actually isn't the true translation of the Japanese film.
Well, you had some really interesting points about that, but he just said that he was going to talk to their Japanese distribution company, and I think it's really interesting that India wants this to premiere, because they don't really have many anime premieres that happen, and to the best of my knowledge, there's not much of an anime culture. But a lot of people were saying, because India has started to be affected by climate change, that they felt that there was more of a need for this film to reach the masses.
That's really interesting.
But I think it'd be really interesting if you could dive into how you said it translates to weather children, and, like, why they might have chosen to name the film Weathering With You.
So I have no idea of why they would maybe do that. But yeah, so tenki is the Japanese word for weather. No is like a particle, which is like a R apostrophe S or of.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And ko is children. Ko can also kind of be a feminine character, so it also could be weather girl. Depending. I would read it as weather children. But I don't know. I thought that Weathering With You kind of has a very romantic feeling, and I think that it helped to encapsulate the romance between the two main characters, Hina Amano and Hodaka Morishima. What were your initial, you know, impressions of the film? I want to know. Because we actually didn't really talk about it much after we saw it.
No.
We wanted to save it for this.
I think we were just so speechless. Like, yet again, it's just stunning animation styles and the colors. Like, the whole thing is just an experience. The music really made my heart soar. I felt like it really built up all the strong moments. I feel like You're just transported into one of his worlds, and I was just ready to be along for the ride. And I love how they were able to just kind of touch on that intimate relationship, not only between Hina and
Hodaka,
but also between Hina, Hodaka, and nature and the world around them.
Yeah, absolutely. There was definitely like a really good A and B plot, I feel like, going on. Like the A plot being the coming of age and the romance between the two main characters, and then the B plot being, it kind of felt pretty explicit that the B plot is like environmentalism and as you were talking about, maybe climate change.
Yeah, like I'm torn for if the B plot is about climate change or if it has something to do about sacrifice, maybe. So I read a really interesting article the other day on a site called Frogcoon, and they had said something really interesting. Here's an excerpt from the article. In the previous work of Shinkai, Voices of a Distant Star and The Place Promised in Our Early Days, the couple sacrifices their relationship for the sake of the greater good. That gave those stories their bittersweet endings. However, Weathering With You is also bittersweet, but the couple made the opposite choice. There's no definitive answer given regarding which choice is better, but there's a definite sense that Shinkai's characters are compelled to make choices about the direction of their lives. And that made me start to wonder, because like, it is a more fantastical film, and I'm wondering like, am I interpreting it super literally by thinking that it is about climate change, even though to me it feels really blatant? Or is this more so about sacrifice?
Well, I think that when it comes to climate change, probably there's some sacrifice that needs to be made. I think that it's also interesting. I looked up some stats on, you know, the different populations and carbon emissions of the different countries of the U.S. and Japan. The U.S. is the second largest producer of CO2 emissions, and we are only 4.2% of the world's population.
That's terrifying.
Yeah, number one is China. They are, I don't have the percentage of their population, but I know that they are, it looks like 1.4 billion about. In numbers. And so Japan came in, interestingly enough, at number five as the largest outputter of CO2 emissions.
That feels so hard to believe because they don't even really use like air conditioners.
Well, yeah, so like that's one of the big differences, I think, between like Japan and the United States, like energy culture. So for example, right, like as you said, they have air conditioners, but they're not central air conditioners, so they'll like, you know, use a lot less output. Same thing with heaters, like even in buildings, like office buildings and schools, they'll still be using things like kerosene lamps to like heat
stuff. Wow.
Yeah, it's interesting to see like what, you know, certain people in the United States might think of as like environmental action versus like what the priorities are of, you know, the Japanese. Like when I was living over there, one of the things I noticed is like there are no vegetarians, like barely at all. Like there is no vegetarian restaurants, there are not vegetarian options. Like they just don't view that as an issue. Like, and it can be reflected in, I was talking with my language teacher, and he was telling me about why Japanese eat whale, and they think that it's okay to eat things like whale and dolphin. Yeah, and
like to this day?
Yeah, yeah. No, he was saying, he's like, for us, yeah, he said for us, and this, my Japanese was pretty good back then, so it was kind of cool, but I couldn't hold this conversation now. But he was talking about how like to us, like a whale is just a fish. In the same way, like why do you eat cow? Like, why do you eat chicken? Like, who said that those are the animals that are okay to eat, but these other animals aren't okay to eat? That was what he said. He's like, to me, whale is fish. People always tell me that that a whale is smart. And he's like, and I just don't believe that. I don't see it. Yeah, like, I am a human.
Wow.
Yeah, we are humans. We can eat whatever. So that's a huge discrepancy, right, in what maybe we as Westerners think is like, oh, the whales need to be protected. They're a part of the environment. Whereas that's not the case over there. They eat horse, you know, I ate horse. It was tasty, actually. But, you know, I could imagine some people like falling off their chair, like at the thought of eating a horse, some like, you know, equestrian lovers.
I could
lovers.
Not. Yeah. I mean, they're such spiritual creatures, mm-hmm. majestic. You've seen those manes.
I've seen,
there are
yes,
unicorns
I've seen horses.
For a reason.
Yeah. And but at the same time, though, the Japanese, they have a really ingrained like affinity and love for nature in their culture. And it shows really like everywhere that you go, like if you're walking around the city streets of Japan, like people put flowers out on the sidewalk everywhere, like potted plants, flowers. Another thing that I've noticed, you know, in Japan is that they are very easygoing with single-use plastics, whereas like here people are trying to in some ways combat that, like people are,
well, they'll bring out the pitchforks if you have a plastic straw.
Yeah, so that's like where we're at, you know, and they're trying to get rid of that, right? But in Japan it's just not even a thing. Like I remember the way you say like I don't need a bag in Japanese is ibukuro irimasen, and I would have to like grab the cashier at the konbini and be like, ibukuro, like, irimasen, like, I do not need it, irimasen. And they would be so confused because it was kind of just part, they're trained very heavily, mm-hmm. and it's just part of their training. Like, you take it and you put it in the bag and you give it to them with the straw and the cutlery and all that kind
wow.
of stuff. And so trying to, like, get them to say no, like, that was always interesting. But their recyclables are much stricter than we are. They are much stricter about how you have to recycle your trash. And they divide it into burnable and non-burnable as well. Yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
So do you think because they burn their like trash and recyclables that could be accounting for some of the high CO2 levels?
Perhaps. I don't know. I assume that like the burnable stuff is supposed to be non-toxic stuff.
Yeah.
That's how it kind of came out to me. They're using a lot less energy, I think, than probably some people, but I don't know how it is that they're number five, because, you know, I think about some of the people that have the largest populations, like Indonesia is the fourth largest population in the world, but it's number 12 in carbon emissions, and yeah, and Brazil is number five in the world's population, but it's number 13 in carbon emissions. So I don't know what the big difference is between them, because the Japanese use trains a lot. You know, they really make use of boats as well. So, and their public transportation system is amazing. So I don't know where a lot of that is coming from. But I think that climate change is something that really affects everyone. Like, is there anything out there about Makoto Shinkai maybe talking to this point?
I actually do have a couple of quotes from him. In the article with Frogcoon, he said, "People say that humans are destroying nature for the sake of their own conveniences. And I agree with that. And yet, I'm the kind of person who doesn't hesitate to turn on the air conditioning in my room when it's hot. Climate change is a large-scale phenomenon with an unimaginable scope. But there's not much a person can do about it on an individual level. Even so, my actions as a single person have a definite effect on the environment. It may feel like something that's out of your realm of responsibility, but it absolutely isn't. I made the film while thinking about how to deal with that problem through the framework of entertainment." Huh. And then he went on to say to the Japan Times, "Humans think on a scale of 100 years or so, but the world works on a much larger scale. The idea that humans can't control the weather is one way to look at things, but at the same time, that's not quite right either, as humans have definitely changed the weather. I don't come to a clear conclusion on this, but the issue definitely lies at the heart of the film." So that quote in particular is really interesting to me because of the role that Hina plays in her ability to bring the sun into, like, it's basically like he took this quote and personified it through Hina, where it's showing her being able to just completely manipulate the weather on a whim for all these different, I don't want to call them selfish desires, but because I'm sure that everybody really benefited at least mentally from seeing the sun after going 2 to 3 months of straight like rain and kind of like that like foggy, gross look that it can get.
Yeah, but I think
that's really interesting. And like it just hit me when I was reading that. And I've read this article like 2 or 3 times.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right in that the events that she was making it sunny for kind of do feel like small change until the very, like, end, like, one of her last big jobs that she had, right?
Yeah, which was for, like, that whole festival. Mm-hmm. So it really was benefiting everybody so that they could see the fireworks. Like, something that I thought was interesting, like, I don't want to equate this to, like, seasonal depression, but it was just definitely something really interesting to note, just the way that the eternal rain affected the psychology of each of the characters in a different way. Mm. Like, I feel like with Hina, she kind of felt almost responsible for, like, the mental health of the whole nation.
Yeah, she was willing to sacrifice herself, right?
Yeah. And I'm wondering, like, if she was willing to make that sacrifice. Like, I don't want to say that it seemed like she regretted it when he went up there to save her, which, like, spoiler alert.
Yeah, if anybody who's tuned into this review podcast and thought we weren't going to do spoilers, like, please turn around now.
This whole episode is going to contain spoilers. This is a minefield of spoilers.
Yes, this is in hopes that you've seen the movie and want to hang out with us and jib-jab about all sorts of things that relate to the plot of the film.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's really interesting how there was a choice to be made. And the choice is that Hina could have chosen to continue to live her regular life, be there with her brother, be there with her new bae, or she could have sacrificed herself for the greater good. And while she does choose to sacrifice herself, Hondaka doesn't want that. He doesn't want that sacrifice. And I don't know, like, to me, that was just so interesting, mm-hmm. because then you see the effects of it, and you see just the ripple effect that one sacrifice could have made, mm-hmm. and it's messed up that, like, this girl would have had to give up her life in order to not cause a climate crisis, and I mean, it's not like that would ever happen, where we're gonna go back to, like, the medieval times and stand at a volcano and pick a member of the village to jump into the volcano to appease Mother Nature.
Right.
But it's just interesting, because, like, is it because Hondaka, like, himself feels like an outcast to society, that he doesn't feel a duty to society? Because it seems like he has a loving family.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, because I think that it was interesting. She chose to sacrifice herself, which is beautiful and expected, right, of the heroine of the story,
yeah.
in some ways. But then when he gets to her, she's ready to go. You know, there's
yeah,
no, like...
Yeah, like, she did not want to be there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. she's not like, no, Hodaka, like, I can't, like, I need to do this for humanity. She never gets into that. As soon as she sees him, she goes after him. Because I think that she realized, like, her eternal unhappiness, like, I don't know, for a part, I mean, I think this might be reading into it too much, but the way that I thought of it while I was watching it is I felt that Hina was kind of like the youth, like, we're putting it on you all. Like, you're the ones that are going to need to fix this, and you're going to have to sacrifice every... Like, meanwhile, while we've been...
Yes!
You know, taking advantage of your praying, you know, for the flea market and for this and for that, you know.
For my birthday party.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, well, meanwhile, while that's been happening, like, the true sacrifice is going to have to be you. It's going to have to be you, Gen Z, kind of a thing. So I got that from it, but I think that I'm watching it through, you know, a pretty, like, I'm watching it through a Western millennial lens.
Well, doesn't that feel like that's how climate change has been portrayed through the media, relayed through the corporations, that, oh no, like, it's because people aren't recycling, or it's because you're not conscious on the individual level and you eat like a totally vegan grass-fed diet that, like, cows are, like, overpopulated more so than they ever should be. So, like,
yeah,
let's get rid of beef. When really, in the reality, it's these larger corporations. Like, they're the ones with the toxic plant.
Yeah.
If I forget to put my Starbucks cup in a recyclable retainer, I mean, yeah, that's my bad, but I'm not gonna throw it onto the subway platform and start a fire. I'm gonna throw it in the nearest trash receptacle.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's...
I wish there was recycling in the subway, though. Like, MTA, if you're listening, that would be a good idea.
Well, they sort it.
They sort? What?
Yeah, it's part of... because they realize that they'll never get people to do it. Because it's just New York is so undisciplined.
Wow.
Yeah. And so basically they're just like, as long as you put it in the trash can, we will sort it for you. So yeah, I'm pretty sure that New York sorts it. And I know, like, and
do they do that with the garbage from the parks too?
I believe so.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, and it's good because, I mean, I totally agree.
Okay. Like, well then, like, I have no guilt.
Yeah, no, as long as you get that in the trash recyclable in New York, I'm pretty sure they sort it.
Wow.
So what you were talking about really touched on something interesting, though, like, in terms of, like, large corporations and things like that. I looked this up, and since 2017, it does appear that our CO2 emissions have been dropping, which is good.
Yeah.
That means that maybe some of the regulations that are being put in place are helping.
Well, that's confusing to me a little bit, because we did leave the climate agreement.
Mm-hmm.
But a very curious ripple effect from that was that we had local governments, we had state governments stepping up and making their own pledges.
Yeah.
So I wonder if it's because of that pushback and that fear that we actually now have, I don't want to say that they're better regulations because not really nationalized, but maybe that could have accounted for it. It does seem like people now more than ever are much more conscious. I just hope that we can continue to push forward so that we don't see some of these, like, scary things that could be happening. Like, according to the Japan Times, new research, I want to say around June 2019, was released by Climate Central, which is a United States nonprofit organization. Previously, the study had found that only 300 million people would be affected, which that's still a really high figure.
Mm-hmm.
But they found that the figure is actually more likely 500 million people by 2100.
Mm-hmm.
So that, like, that is in our lifetime.
Oh, yeah.
Like, we will be doing this podcast. We'll be cute and gray. we'll be trying real hard with, like, some K-beauty anti-aging stuff.
Oh, my God.
but what I found to be really frightening is that, like, under the worst case scenario, we can expect a global temperature rise of 4 degrees in, like, I already can't stand summers in the city.
I know, and we don't even live in, like, a hot place. We're in the northeast of the United States.
No, and, like, they're talking about how Manhattan can be underwater. And then there's the new analysis, the Buttresses, a 2017 study, that concluded that Japan could lose nearly all of its beaches. Like, remember those cute beach dates on Tourist House? They're gone. And, like, they're gone by 2065.
Yeah, they already, I mean, those things, like, people are already getting displaced in many ways around the world. Indigenous people in Alaska are having a really hard go of it. I think that, like,
the polar bears.
Yeah, the
think
polar
of them.
Bears. Yeah, like, the and the wildlife and everything. So I think.
Fun fact though.
Yeah, please.
In Canada.
About polar bears?
Yes.
Okay.
In the northernmost city in Canada, when the seasons change from winter to spring, the poor polar bears get really confused. So they've started coming down into the town looking for spring, like looking for like, ah, oh, yes, it is clearly not winter anymore. It is clearly spring, but it's turning spring earlier and earlier that they're coming into town like 1 to 2 months too early. So they have polar bear jail. Where they capture them with their little helicopters and then they fly them to this artificially created habitat so that they can transition with the seasons and go to their mating grounds during the proper time so that they're not going early and then their young are dying because it became cold much quicker than they thought it would.
Wow. That is a fun fact. I mean,
but it's like polar bear jail. Like, can you picture him with like the little bars?
And
little criminal hat.
I can't imagine how stressful that must be for the polar bears.
I know.
Oh man. Yeah. So, I definitely thought that this was a film about climate change. It really was blatantly obvious to me, and also the fact that you found that great quote by the director.
Yeah. Like he's. Yeah. I mean, I don't really feel like he gives any advice, but. I don't really think that he was looking to be like, yes, I am a Poindexter. I am a climate change expert.
Yeah.
I think the advice is within the film that, yes, it's on the individual level. Yes, there are sacrifices that need to be made. But I also kind of feel like this was a little, like a bit of defiance where it's like, why does it have to be us? Why did it have to come to this point?
I agree.
Like, why should Hina have to sacrifice herself mm-hmm. when we had so many other warning signs?
Right. Well, it's women often feel like a lot. They have to do everything themselves, right? They have to put it all on them. I think young people feel that way too. Like, it is on me. It's on me. And so maybe, like, by having such a wonderful character like Hina and Hodaka there as a support to kind of help show the way, show that you can be defiant, I think that was like a really good message.
How many films do you see where the male lead is so supportive of a woman and her like side hustle?
I know, it was so good, I know. Oh my God, I loved it. I thought that it was really sweet. I feel like we should talk more about like those types of things and aspects of the film, but I do want to quickly say, because I think I had mentioned earlier a few, you know, negative things that Japan does when it comes to climate change, but I really want to hit on some important ways in which I think the U.S. could maybe learn from them. That being, I think that the central heating is one thing, right? Their appliances are smaller. This is something that is also, you know, the case in Europe. Mm-hmm. You know, like in the United States, everything is larger. Our cars are larger. You know, we drive everywhere. In Japan, they use public transportation a lot, and it's more convenient to them. So that's one of the reasons. But they also bicycle everywhere. They bicycle everywhere. It's really cool.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You know, they have those e-bikes, and like they're called mama-sans. And it's for the housewives, the shufu. They basically have these e-bikes with like a baby in the front and a baby in the back. They're these women. They have their like full face on. Their hair's done. They're in like they're amazing. If they're a working woman, they have like you know their working uniform on. Otherwise, they're usually dressed like really fabulously.
I want a fan fiction of this.
Yeah. Oh my God. I mean, they're
wow.
And they just zip around and they're like bringing their kids everywhere. One thing though that I notice is they're not that into helmets over there, which I don't like. But it's very safe in a lot of other ways. Like they very much are more. Cognizant of like traffic law and things like that. Like I've never seen anything like it actually. It's kind of strange. Like you could be stopped at a traffic light and there's the do not walk sign and you could be the only person around and you wait. You do not cross because it's just frowned upon.
Oh,
you know,
wow.
It's kind of like this interesting social I don't know if it's horribly frowned upon, and sometimes you do see people cross, but you'll have like five people just standing around and waiting for the light to turn, even if there are no cars coming. Whereas in New York, it's like, can I get across? Like, let me see how far I can push it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I kind of sort of jaywalk like all the time.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a different pace, but yeah, the smaller appliances and the smaller cars. I also think that there's a lot less food waste in Japan because there's.
I was gonna say because you go to like Perkins. Mm-hmm. And you have good basically enough to feed three people.
Yeah, yeah. Whereas there, it's like they have, you know, your bento and it's appropriately sized. You know what I mean? Also, they have less food waste because their grocery stores do sales at night. Like, come 9 o'clock, they'll put all the expirational, like all the food that is going to expire on sale. And so that's what I would do when I was living there. Is I would just go to the grocery store at like 9 or 9:30, and I would just buy up everything that was like marked half off that night.
Whoa! And that's awesome. Yeah, that's like such an affordable like meal. You're getting rid of the food waste, like. My older brother works at a grocery store that recently got like constructed, brand new, really nice, and the sales are down despite it being like brand new, top of the line, because they are right across the street from a Walmart, and their prices aren't competitive enough. And something that he told me that really disturbed me is that they had, like, him and his team throw away just, like, gallon upon gallon of, like, milk and dairy products and just stuff that had not sold. Mm. And I'm wondering, like, why didn't they just mark it down 3 days before they had to get rid of it?
Yeah.
Because the sell-by date doesn't necessarily mean that it's expired, it's bad, it's cottage cheese. It just means that, like, legally you have to sell this by that date because that gives the consumer enough time to then consume the product.
Yeah. No, absolutely. So there's a lot of things that I think that we still need to strive for in the U.S. And, like, we have a huge problem with single-use plastic here, too. You know, like, everybody still is using it. You know, for every person that you see using a reusable bag in New York City, like, there's 30 people still using plastic bags, you know? So
I hoard reusable bags. Like, I don't know what it is. It's just Home Goods comes out with those cute little designs each season. And then, like, you know, I give them away, like, with gifts. I use them, like, till they break. I mean, I could have worse problems.
No, I think that...
I could be living with, like, 20 cats, which, like... Not really
would that,
a problem.
I was about to say, would that be a problem for you?
I mean, that would be the first steps of my cat sanctuary, but, like, I totally digress.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about, like, the movie and, like, the plot and the characters, because they were amazing, and I have a new favorite love, and his name is Nagi Amano.
Oh my gosh, he was a
him. Yeah, for those of you who might not remember the character's name, Nagi Amano is Hina Amano's younger brother, who we get introduced to in the beginning. Hotoka notices him and in the back of a
bus.
Yeah, playing two different women. Or not playing two, but
and
like,
isn't
yeah.
he like an elementary school student?
Yeah, he's a shogakse.
Oh
yeah.
My gosh.
Yeah, oh my gosh. It really was.
He's
so
gonna
funny.
Be like an idol.
Yeah, and it was hilarious how they brought it back too. Because later on in the movie when he gets like taken in by protective services or whoever they are, and then they have the two girls come and the one girl looks at him and she's like, what did she say? Something along the lines of like, at least you could have, like, not invited your ex, like, to break
which,
you out.
Like, that was just, like, whoa.
I know. It was so funny. Oh, man.
Something I loved was how they brought back the two main characters from Your Name cameo.
Those cameos gave me life.
Everyone applauded.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
It was amazing to watch, because for those of you who, you know, haven't been to the Anime NYC screening room, it sits up to 10,000 people. So if you can all imagine 10,000 otakus, like, plants getting watered simultaneously, that's what it looked like.
It was so good.
Yeah, we got to see Taki and we got to see Mitsuha. It was a little unclear when in the timeline it was, but that it does, though, confirm and make it canon that it's part of the same world.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting. And I wonder if Makoto Shinkai will maybe do more.
I would love that. Like, something that I really love about the creator Clamp is that they are constantly recycling characters and character designs, and it's all this, like, great immersive universe. And also with, like, the Quentin Tarantino universe. So, like, I'm pretty excited to see, like, is this going to become the Shinkai universe? Are we going to see references to older movies? Like, will we see things from, like, Garden of Words, which, like, I would love.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that would be great. I haven't gotten to see that yet. But it's on my list.
We are doing an episode for that in October.
Oh, great. Okay, then I will watch it before then.
Plenty of time.
Yeah. And do you, though, the thing that I couldn't tell is where in the timeline these cameos were. Like.
Didn't they say it was, like, 2 or 3 years after?
After they met each other again?
After the movie.
After the movie. So were they together then?
I think so.
Oh, that's great. They definitely seemed older. And I think
they were in college, too.
It makes sense also, like, because Tokyo wasn't underwater when they reunited, right?
No.
So it would make sense that maybe, like, it was right after. But they didn't seem happy. Oh. They didn't seem like they were happy in that they had reunited yet. You know, they kind of both seemed a little bittersweet, but I don't know. So I would think I would have to watch it again, maybe,
and try to get another perspective. It's hard because we didn't really see them together. Mm-hmm. We saw his grandma or his mom?
It was his grandmother's house, yeah. And they were putting
And she was working as, like, a perfume girl, almost. Yeah. Something that I also thought was, like, really interesting was the gun.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. It was so unexpected.
Because, like, I've never seen it treated in that way. Because I love watching, like, cyberpunk crime films. Mm-hmm. Like, I love watching Psycho Pass. I've watched Gundam. And I'm used to them having, like, pew, pew, pew. But with this, it was just really different. Like, he was repulsed by it. Mm-hmm. He was, like, panicking, really afraid. And that was kind of, like, the first time where I realized, like, oh, wow, like, I must be really desensitized to guns.
Yeah, you think? I mean, in Japan, they have some of the most stringent gun control laws in the world. Like, it's a crime to own a gun, or it's a crime to own a bullet. And firing a gun can get you up to 20 years in jail.
Which, that for me, like,
how
does he not, like, go to jail?
I don't know, because he, like, fires it twice.
He's on probation for, like, what, a year?
I guess. I don't know what happened at that.
But then he's allowed to just go to college?
I don't know. That was the one part
what if
of
his parents are rich?
They should have mentioned that if that was the case. I don't know if a rich parent could get you out of something like that, though. That was the one part of the movie.
I mean, he could have been looking at 40 years.
Yeah, that was the one part of the movie that I... And it's hilarious because it's like a modern magical romance. But that was the part where I was like, what? Like, how
yeah,
did he get
it's like,
freed?
Did he take a plea? Did he, like, tell them about that shady host club thing that was going on? Was he, like, a whistleblower?
I don't know. If anybody out there knows or has any more, like, insight into this, I would be really interested to hear it.
Please tweet at us at ShoujoMojoPod, because I'm, like, that's the one thing in the whole film that I was really baffled by.
Mm. Yeah, and they...
And, like, I was okay with Japan being underwater. But this, I was like, oh, I don't know about that.
Yeah, like, Tokyo's completely underwater. There's a girl that's, like, up in some cloud in the sky. It's modern day. Like, they did such a good job of doing, like, modern fantasy magic. That's so hard to do. And it was just so seamless. It was really great.
It would make such a good live action film.
It would. I think you're right. I think that would be really
nice. I think they're making Your Name. Oh, wow.
Do you know if it's going to be Western or Japanese?
Western, I believe.
Interesting. I wonder where they're going to set it.
I don't know.
We'll find out.
It's in the really early stages from what I heard.
That's cool, though. Hopefully they don't mess it up.
I know.
Get
your pitchforks ready, just in case.
I also appreciated Makoto Shinkai's storytelling, because he employed, like, even with the gun, he employed what's called Chekhov's gun. And it's the idea is that if a gun is showed, it has a lot of weight, right? And it needs to be fired, or otherwise there's no point in showing the gun. And so I thought that the times that Hodaka chose to fire his gun were very loaded scenes, like really exciting. Like the first time he does it is when he is saving
Hina.
Yeah, exactly. And the second time he uses it is when he's saving her again. At the end, I think, right? Doesn't he fire it up in the air?
Yeah, like, how does he, like, he
fired in front of
officers.
At officers, yeah. How did he get off? I don't know. Like, did they believe his weather thing? I don't know. I just don't know. So that was the part that I thought was a little confusing. And I actually, I know that certain people, you know the twist in Your Name about how, like, the time difference is 3 years. Like, I felt like that twist was more satisfying than this twist of, like, how did Hodaka get off scot-free? Yeah, I totally am with you on that. I have no idea. I have no idea.
Wait, 3 years?
Right, in Your Name, right? Like, that was the reason why when Mitsuha went to Tokyo to see Taki the first time, he never recognized her. It's because they hadn't met yet.
I see.
Yeah. And so, like that's the twist kind of at the end. She, like, goes to see him. He doesn't recognize her. And so because of that, she starts to, like, pull away. And then the meteor thing happens, and they almost don't make it. But then luckily they do.
What was that meteor thing?
It was, like, basically there's this comet that, and I think it's a fictional comet, but it's a comet that goes by every once in whatever years, and on the day of the viewing of it, a piece of it breaks off, and it falls to the earth and as a meteor, and it crashes in the town, killing the town's people where Mitsuha lives. Ugh, it's crazy.
I know, so, but it's, like, so good.
Yeah, it's super good. That I believe, though, more.
I didn't really pick up on that. I was just like, oh, yeah, wow.
Oh, really? Yeah. That was, because I think that was a smaller kind of twist. Like, it wasn't the big reveal, but I thought that was really brilliant at the time. Because then I thought, I was like, no way she didn't look at a calendar on her phone and not realize what year it was. But then I went and I looked at calendars on my phone, and I looked at my phone, and it never says the year. It's just the month and the day. So it's crazy.
But wouldn't she notice that the day isn't really lining up?
I think
because if it's like the 9th, and, you know, in 2019, December 9th is a Monday.
Oh, that's a good point.
But she's looking at December 9th, 3 years into the future.
Yeah.
And it's like a Wednesday.
Yeah. It is surprising that it never could have come up. It is believable enough that I'm, like, willing to let it go. And I guess that's the point I'm trying to make about, like, that I'll let go. But this gun thing with Hodaka?
I can't.
Yeah.
I can't. Like, does an insanity plea exist? Like, did they just think that he was insane because he thought about, oh, she prays in the weather and she's in the sky. I don't know. I really don't.
Yeah. And so, again, if anybody wants to, like, clue us in on that, that would be very interesting. I mean, I actually, when living in Japan, that was something very different, I felt, like, than living in the U.S. I know that statistically, right, like, mass shootings are the smallest percentage of gun deaths in the U.S., but they're still super highly publicized, and, like, the media covers them heavily. So, like, there's this fear, I think, that at least I personally feel, of just going out in public, you know? You never know what's going to happen.
Well, it's like you can't even be safe in, like, a movie theater anymore.
Yeah, I'm going to see Frozen 2 this week, and, like, I still get, like, nervous about it. And it's,
well, we had, like, oh, it was, like, a really scary moment. We were at the Staten Island Stadium 16. We were seeing the Joker, And next thing we know, coming up the stairs, we see this red laser on like someone's forehead. And I look at Sebastian and I'm just like, oh my God. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. Like, is this a shooter? Mm-hmm. And then they come up the stairs and it's just some old woman with her daughter, like using that so that she can see to go up the stairs.
A red laser pointer?
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah, she had like this tactical light so that she could see going up the stairs.
Oh, I see.
And we, like, three big men, like, stand up, but then they see, like, oh, it's just this little old lady. But, like, really, really bad use of judgment.
Yeah, people reacted. Yeah, it's, people react, I mean, all the time in the United States to, like, sounds that sound like gunfire, right? And it creates a panic. I was on the subway the other day, and a fight broke out, and people immediately were like, do they have a gun? Do they have a gun? You know, it was, whereas when I was living in Japan, never crossed my mind. I was like, walking, wow. I was walking down the street like, la, 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 la. Like, it just like, it was so, it felt so safe. And so I think that I'm really curious to know what like Japanese audiences thought about a character who has a gun. Cause like, we'll see characters that have guns all the time, all everywhere, anywhere, you know? And it's definitely desensitized. Like, it's not as, I'm not as worried, like, that somebody's gonna get shot almost, like when I'm watching television, because so many bullets fly and just miss. Whereas like any time that that gun went off during Weathering With You, I was so nervous that somebody was gonna die.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was pretty strong storytelling. Do you have anything else that you wanna talk about how much, what you liked about the movie or what you disliked or what you thought?
Overall, I really loved it. My favorite scene was the night before Hina slips away to kind of go, and they're just hanging out in the hotel and just like have a really good time. Like, to me, that was just so pure to finally see them acting like kids and to finally feel this relief that everything will be okay.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite parts, too. I loved the scene right before that when they're struggling to find places to stay. I just felt it would be difficult for a kid to sneak away like that, which in many ways is good.
I find that to be interesting, though, because, like, I watch so many anime, and, like, the kids are just living on their own.
Yeah.
Like, well, I am in high school and I have my own apartment.
That is immediate.
But with this, it was like so different. It was like, well, you know, like we lost our mom, like dad's gone. And I didn't really think it was so strange that she was living on her own raising her younger brother. And it was just so curious to me that like it became a huge deal and like Child Protective Services were going to step in and they were going to go into some form of the foster system. I just assumed that like, oh yeah, teenage girl, she can just live on her own. It's just like my favorite anime.
Yeah, I think that that honestly is just a trope across like so many cultures of like the orphan child, right?
Yeah.
You know, like a lot of, I'm trying to think of
Series of unfortunate events.
Yeah, exactly. Like, when you take the parents out of the picture, there's more room for the kids to go on their adventure.
Yeah.
No parent's gonna be like, oh yeah, like, my daughter's disappearing, you know what I mean? Because she's praying about the weather. Like, it would totally alter the story.
right? Oh, where'd you get all that money? Oh, you prayed for the sun? Hina, go to your room and study.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You got entrance exams, girlfriend. What are you doing?
Oh, she lied about her age.
Oh, I love that. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was cool. I mean, I feel like, because the version of, like, legally becoming an adult in Japan is 20. It's hatachi.
Oh.
Yeah, and it's a big, cool event that, like...
What is the drinking age?
20.
Oh, it's much higher than I thought.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so, like, whereas in the U.S. it's 18, you can vote, you can go to war, all those things.
But you can't drink until you're 21.
But you can't drink until you're 21. Right. Exactly. But you can smoke cigarettes at 18. So, anyway, though, with what was I going to say? I had a point about it all.
Oh, no. With turning 20 as being adult.
Right. So with turning 20 as being an adult, I don't know, like, what is the cutoff age that you could live on your own? Like, remember Toru Honda, like, in Fruits Basket, which we're going to talk about next episode?
Oh, yeah.
But she was living in a tent on her own, but I think that she was doing that on the DL.
She was, because she had... Freaking grandpa. Oh, can't you just, like, stay with your friends?
I mean, geez. Toru also could grow a backbone and say, actually, no, grandpa, you know? But that's part of Toru's character, you know? She doesn't want to ever put anyone out for any reason ever.
Because we both know her friends would have, like, let her stay with them.
They loved her. They would have totally protected her. But, you know, she has to go on her journey with Yuki and Kyo.
Yes.
And Shigure. Yeah, I'm trying to think about if there's anything else that I wanted to say about the film other than, like, I did really enjoy it. I thought watching it in that manner was really cool, with so many other people, but it was hard to see the screen sometimes.
It was really hard. I kept switching between two of them.
They had three screens, and it was literally
this really tall guy in front. Yeah.
And 10,000 people, like, it's going to be hard to see, but it was kind of funny because, like, everyone's heads was just, like, slightly moving, like, kind of, you saw, like, everyone trying to move just to see the next part. So I would definitely be down to see this film again while it's out in theaters. It would be
I would
really
want to see it again too.
Yeah, and, like, really,
it comes out in America on January 14th.
I believe it's 16th and 17th. Yeah, and hopefully if it gets a good reception, then G-Kids will run it again.
Yeah, yeah. Which would be great.
Yeah. Let's talk really quickly about, like, some of our other favorite anime movies.
That's really hard.
There are many.
Obviously anything by Miyazaki. But I also really liked Garden of Words, also by Shinkai. I don't know. I find the breakthrough at the end to be really profound. I always cry.
I haven't seen that, so tell me a little bit about it.
So it's all about this high school student who, whenever it rains, he goes into the park and he sketches shoes. And he meets this, I believe she's a high school teacher, but not at his school. And they form, like, this interesting relationship where she's, like, drinking or trying to sober up. And they form this dialogue together. And it's just really, it's not like, oh, how weird, like, this older woman taking advantage of this boy. Like, it seems like they both get a lot out of the relationship and out of these rainy days together.
That sounds nice. Oh, I will check it out. One of my favorite movies, like, anime movies ever, and this is older, but it's Paprika,
yes.
The 2006 film, that was directed by Satoshi Kon, and that just is so freaking good. Oh my god, like, my eyes were feasting the entire time, and I know that you've seen that movie, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and I know that you have some strong opinions about it, right?
Yeah, just that, you know, Inception... You know where you got the idea from. You know you weren't original. You know you watched Paprika. You know it is a Paprika ripoff.
I mean, I agree with that. It's definitely got a lot that's going on. But here, wait. Let me see. When did Inception come out? 2010. 4 years later. That's just enough time to make a movie. That's awesome. I thought that movie was so good, though, because it just really brought me to a new place in subconscious thinking, and also, like, richness of animation. Like, it really took it to a new level, and I felt like I was watching something completely original. So that was one of my favorite movies. And then, I mean, if I had to pick, there's too many Miyazaki films, we could be here all day, we could do an entire episode on it.
I know.
But what's your favorite Miyazaki film?
Probably Spirited Away, because it was my first.
Oh.
The one that broke my heart the most, though, Graveyard of Fireflies.
Oh.
Do not watch it. It is, like, it's good. It's great. It's a really, really accurate portrayal of... just the aftermath of the atomic bomb, but it will destroy you.
Oh, no. Oh, I haven't seen that one. I do feel like I need to watch it. Like, when I was in Japan, I also felt like I was like, I need to go to Hiroshima. So it was just like, I literally took 5 days of my trip, like, just to get down to Hiroshima.
Wow.
And back, because it's like a full day of travel both ways. And so eventually I will see it. My favorite Miyazaki films, though, I would say Howl's Moving Castle.
Yes.
Oh my god, what a romance. What a whirlwind romance, steampunky, beautiful, like, industrial revolution yumminess all in my tummy. And then I also, like, have this huge sweet spot for Kiki's Delivery Service.
Yes!
Yeah, like, we spoke last time, the last episode we did was Anime of Our Childhood. That movie was on Disney. And it was dubbed really well, and so it was on quite a bit. And I remember, and I didn't know that it was anime. I vaguely think maybe I thought that it was similar to Sailor Moon, but it just, like, never crossed my mind.
I just assumed it was, like, a Disney movie as a kid.
Yeah.
I loved it.
I loved it, too.
So, that was my first, like, well, no, I lied. Then that was my first Miyazaki film. But the first Miyazaki film that I knew was a Miyazaki film was Spirited Away.
I totally agree. I had no idea who made that film when I was watching it back in the day. But now I have little handkerchiefs that have, you know, Kiki and Gigi on it. It's just so cute. I love it. But again, like, please check out Makoto Shinkai's Weathering With You, or Tenki no Ko, film when it hits theaters or when it starts streaming. It's definitely worth the watch. We'd love to hear what you all think of the film.
We would definitely love to hear what you think about Weathering With You. Please, like, tweet at us, comment in our Facebook group. Thank you to everybody who has joined so far. And just thank you so much for tuning in this week.
Yeah, we hope that you enjoyed it. Next week, we'll be discussing Fruits Basket.
Yes.
We're going to be comparing the manga with the original anime and this 2019 anime. And we have a lot of thoughts, so we're excited to share them with you.
Yes, and you can follow Shoujo Mojo on Instagram at Shoujo Mojo Pod. Please feel free to like us on Facebook and join our Facebook group, Shoujo Mojo Pod Official.
If you have an anime that you want us to watch and review or talk about, email us at shoujomojopod@gmail.com or tweet at us at shoujomojopod.
And if you enjoyed this episode, please, please, please review us on iTunes. It will really help us to continue to grow. You can find this and all of our other episodes on iTunes, Spotify, and SoundCloud, or wherever else you get your podcasts.
Yeah, and if you love anime theme songs, please follow my band, Otaku Ongaku, on Instagram and TikTok. Our handle is otaku_ongaku, and it literally translates into otaku being, like, nerd, and ongaku meaning music. So it's nerd music for your listening pleasure.
I love that. And if you are looking for your next amazing cosplay or for a cute amigurumi doll, please follow me at Lady Cat Fashion on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and TikTok.
Yes, she does good work, folks. I can speak from experience. All right, so signing off, I am Alexis.
And I'm Alex.
And this was Shoujo Mojo.